podcast listeners, have you always wanted to party with me, Kevin, the host of the show? Of course you have. Mark your calendars for December 6th and get ready for the Christmas party of a lifetime. It's going to be with me and some of my best friends, including today's podcast guest.
But what is it?
I, Kevin, your host, will be doing my very first ever and possibly my last live movie night review. And if I totally screw that up, it's totally fine because we'll also have the Sacred Tension podcast, plus an amazing concert with RBTS Win and the hosts of the party, 117.
Who's that?
If you're asking that, well, stick around because Matt Langston, the lead singer, is my guest on the podcast today.
But where is it?
Great question again. The whole thing's going down in the Radio Room in Greenville, South Carolina. Get your tickets now in the description.
Now, the accountability partner no one asked for, Kevin McCreary. Here's Say Goodnight, Kevin.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Say Goodnight, Kevin podcast. I'm doing my radio voice because that's how I met this guy. I met him on the radio. You know, people are like, oh, you got a face for radio. This is a friendship for radio.
Friendship for just radio.
Today we're going to talk about stuff that I really haven't talked a lot about on the podcast, which is why I'm excited about it. I talk a lot about Christian movies, but have not gotten into the Christian music industry. This guy that I'm having on today is a huge defender of the Christian music industry. He's highly invested in it. So much money is on the line for him, and he's going to defend it to me. No, it's always fun because there's either I get people on here who hate me.
Yeah.
Or people who like me or somewhere in between.
People on your podcast that hate you.
Yeah, like guests.
Oh, yeah.
That must be
so much fun.
I've destroyed their content.
The lives.
I've taken the thing that they worked really hard on and made fun of it.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you've never done it.
Which is so weird because I feel like in music, that happens all the time, and it's kind of something that you get used to maybe a lot quicker than if you spend, you know, 6 months, a year, year and a half working on a film. And like
you think that's how long they work on these Christian movies?
I mean, am I already giving them too much credit?
Absolutely.
I feel like that's how long we
the
work on records.
The average Christian movie, they can get a Christian film done in 6 months.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's what I said. 6 months, a year.
You mentioned a year.
Year and a
so
half.
Then
so then you grabbed
like,
onto that and you're like, that's incorrect.
False. Derp. You think this is Pixar? No.
Yeah, but I feel like ever since we started putting out records, it's like the next day, the internet is full of people that are like, this sucks. Y'all were trying to sound like Herpity Dude. Y'all couldn't even do that.
More like minus 117 stars. So people don't. I mean, they may know who you are. People don't know who you are.
Okay.
Let's not assume. Let's just get into how you got into the Christian music industry. Tell people who you are and, like, your experience. Just go through where you took 12 podcast episodes on your own podcast and condense that down into 5 minutes because I have other questions I have to ask.
Right. I'm Matt Langston. Very happy to be here in front of the SGK crowd.
I'm Matt Langston. I'm happy to be here.
I'm just happy to be here, man.
Hi, Matt.
My life could have taken a turn today. By the grace of God, I'm here. But SGK, no, I play in this band called 117. I do my own podcast called 11D Life, sort of chronicling our journey through that. I was a huge fan growing up of the Tooth and Nail culture, which is something that I feel like is lost on generations that are younger than us, but it was a huge cultural touchstone for people like me and Kevin. Christian music was some of the only art that I was like exposed to as a kid. I guess because my parents hated me.
Yeah. Did you hear about other stuff? But
oh, I knew about other stuff. But it wasn't until I got to like late junior high or high school that like the world of all of this like amazing other music sort of opened up to me. Like all the
like Britney Spears.
Yeah, Britney Spears.
Christina Aguilera.
Anything that Fred Durst been a part of. I'm just a super
the
into
Fred
it.
Durst experience.
I guess I can say that Christian music was my gateway into actual music, or music that was just being done in the world that didn't have these labels on it, like Christian and secular.
What years was that?
I feel like the year. So in the year 2000, 2000 to 2004 was my high school experience.
Okay.
I graduated in 2004.
Okay.
I
graduated 2005.
Yeah. And I feel like that was the heyday of Christian record labels were signing every single person that put on a guitar and had a cross necklace. And so that was like the bands that I grew up with.
POD and Mercy Me are really blowing up right now. Yeah. We need our version of that.
Yeah, yeah. I love POD. I got super into MXPX. Because I got into MXPX, I started getting into Blink-182. That was like my gateway into other music. Mm. I remember when like Reliant K put their first record out. Like I was in high school and I flipped out when I heard that band for the first time.
Yeah.
Like not that stuff I feel like necessarily ages
what?
The best.
Songs about Marilyn Manson? Whoa.
Oh yeah, I thought it was like infinitely clever and just
Is he saying ain't or ain't my girlfriend? And why doesn't he mention Jesus in this song? I'm sure you find that sort of thing so funny. And I find that thing so funny. Let's break down why it's funny, and then I'll make it even funnier.
Because it was your reality.
Yes.
Because you believed that. You believed that that neurosis was
that
something
was important
that was necessary.
For some reason. Yeah, necessary.
Yeah.
I feel like the way we talk about that sort of stuff is, though, how people refer today to a lot of Christian movies.
Mm.
It's almost kind of 10 years removed. Like, I think there are kids now who a lot of the movies that they're seeing are just like Christian movies.
Yeah.
Or like that they're looking for finding God in the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know that's an old movie. It's probably as old as the music we're talking about.
Right.
But, you know, there is that kind of like, this is important because it's Christian.
Mm.
And yet the, you know, you mentioned real music, like, there is that very clear distinction between real movies and Christian movies.
Yeah, because one seems like an approximation of something. One kind of feels like an imposter. And I don't mean in any way to lump the entirety of what people would consider to be Christian art that was made that time all into this one thing. I think what I'm specifically referring
to
are it, yeah,
of the like the average of the culture as
yeah,
a whole.
It's you know
like the
and
subculture. As
you're
a whole.
Talking about profit maximizing companies, Christian record labels, who are looking out at the rest of the world and saying this type of music seems to be selling, and this kind of thing seems to be. But our audience is primarily made up of people that are receiving art a decade too late, and so this seems to be the thing that feels more safe to them. Because things that are constantly moving and progressing at the forefront of culture and art and music always seem a little sexier, a little bit like edgier, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that is the kind of thing that scares people that grew up in our kind of situation, was very Protestant conservative.
Yeah.
And so these people, almost in this brilliant way, it seems like, sort of take this and say, well, we need to rewind a little bit because this audience is not necessarily ready for this. They're threatened by
the new
what
thing.
This new thing looks like and feels like.
So then there, it's like, here's the thing that was new recently.
Yeah.
We're distilling it for you to make it palatable.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why is that?
I feel like I ask myself this question a lot. Like, why is it so important to shave off the edges of all things? Why is it important to take things that feel very pointed and to take all their interesting bits and qualities away? But I feel like that's what the Christian music industry has done for decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost feel like that's different now with Christian movies, that there was a time when there were the Christian versions of things. I mean, even VeggieTales is like, you like Pixar, you'll love not as good Pixar.
You love the polygon count on this.
But yet I can't think of a Christian movie that's come out recently that feels like a parody, in not the funny sense, but the Christian sense, of a secular film.
Interesting.
If you love Avengers, you'll love Bible Man. Like that, I feel like that's very much from a different era.
Yeah.
Now they're not doing that.
Well, I would say, and I feel like you would probably agree with me on this, I feel like now
probably not.
It's that they're no longer even looking to what's happening in art in the world and reflecting that back and trying to sanitize that for their audience, mm-hmm. I think that they are so tied to this pseudo-political agenda of conservative Christianity has become such more a political movement than any sort of like religious enlightenment experience.
And it may also be reflected. I haven't listened to Christian music a lot recently, but there are times when I'll flip on K-Love or whatever.
Yeah.
And it sounds like nothing in the secular world.
Mm.
And not in a good way. Like nothing I've ever heard before. It blows my mind. No, it blows my mind in the sense that it'll play one song and then it'll play the next song. And I'm like, did they accidentally repeat the song? That it's almost this inbreeding where they're no longer people who are. And again, this is just a approximation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this is every single artist.
You don't have to be right.
I'm not even saying that I know what I'm talking about here. That this is... They're now inspired by other Christian artists.
Yeah.
And to the point where you're like, where did they read this? Where did they hear this?
Yeah.
How did they learn to, like, what inspired them to make this song? And it's, well, I was just driving down the road and listening to a song, and I was like, I could make that song. And then they make that song. And they just keep doing this.
I think it's...
And it's that way in Christian movies, too, where you have... One, maybe, let me preface it this by saying it's like that in movies where you have one innovative movie come out and now every studio wants that thing again.
Right.
You know, like then you get all these versions of that.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just that's just the way the market works. But you'll have every 4 or 5 years, you get one Christian movie that really blows up.
Yep.
And then now everybody's making God's Not Dead. Or after Passion of the Christ, you had a bunch of like period piece Christian movies.
So I feel like the parallel for that to me is this metaphor within music and film, particularly things that have the Christian tag that comes along with it. I equate that to having this entire electromagnetic spectrum of color. You have your gamma waves and your radons and your
ultraviolets
and your everything. Having this entire rainbow spectrum of color, and the world, like most of the world, is being exposed to this entire spectrum of art and expression and emotion and impact and narrative. And I feel like Christian subculture takes one color and they will only create art within a shade of that color. And so when you have an entirely new generation of people who have only been exposed to red, then to
red
them,
is the
art
color.
Looks a lot like this monochromatic sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where there's constantly fluctuating between shades of red, ignoring the fact that there's this entire spectrum that they could have access to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you... Tell me a little bit about your music. It sounds like you have some sort of authority on this issue, but maybe not.
You know, I try to very clearly delineate that I am not an authority on anything other than my own experience.
Yeah.
Because I have friends that still work in this industry. I have friends that like, they, you know, they're cashing paychecks, putting their kids through college, doing all these things that like you would think if you only talked to Matt Langston that this was like the shittiest thing you could ever do. for a living.
Yeah.
But I think I just had a very specific set of circumstances. I saw a very particular set of suffering happening.
Like what?
Just this sort of creative oppression of being a part of a system that is completely message driven. Mm. And when you are creating art that can only fit into this one narrative, this one Christian message that's even only reflective of a small color of Christianity itself, of Protestant evangelicalism, that everyone at the end of the day suffers because you have too many things trying to bottleneck through this one experience, and what you come out the other end of it with is just this very crushed to normal, sanitary, safe, uninteresting, boring thing.
So you think the art suffers because there's the focus on the message?
I do, or, and I feel like you and I were talking about this earlier this weekend, where when you have something that is where everything has to bottleneck through the message itself, That's propaganda. Mm. It's the message at all costs.
Right.
Instead of something that is a that provides more of a freeing experience of allowing people to think for themselves, allowing people to connect their own dots, to let it be for them what it's going to be and not having to control it all the time.
Where do you think that pressure comes from?
I mean, where do you think it comes from? Because I would say...
Satan.
Well, see, the devil.
I don't know. I mean, I would lean towards thinking that it's, you know, a studio exec who doesn't get it. Like, I feel like that's probably you as somebody who was in it playing in a band. There was Fall in Line or Don't, and... some people make one choice, some people make the other in order to feed their families or in order to stay true to themselves. Yeah. But I also think that there's something motivating those people up top to do that. Like, I think that there's a market that wants that.
Yeah, it's money. I mean, it's the reason that people make or can get away with making movies that are inherently not good movies by modern standards of filmmaking.
That's your opinion?
No, it is. It totally is, but I believe it firmly.
Yeah.
And they get away with it because they fall in line with this message. The message becomes an excuse for narrowing the spectrum of human experience down to this one thing of it's the worship of correctness. We have to have the right thing to say. We have to make sure that we're portraying this the right way. And it almost assumes that the audience is stupid.
Yeah.
And you have to connect the dots for
them. You have to talk down to that audience. Yeah. But there's, I think there's also this level to where it's kind of like a rap song made for a youth group. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's the motivation is to
culturally appropriate
a medium instead of being passionate about a medium.
Yeah.
There's, here are the numbers that say that kids are watching movies. And so we should be making movies. Here's the numbers that say kids are listening to music. But see, I think that's the well-meaning people.
Mm.
Like, those are the people who actually think that a message is important to get out to the kids.
Yep.
So they're making content. They're making, they're like, well, I would be a traveling minister.
It's coming from a good place.
But
yeah,
nobody will listen to me that if I was a traveling minister. So what are things that we can do? Well, kids are listening to rap. Let's do a little rap song so they feel at home.
Yeah.
And they just feel uncomfortable, obviously, whenever that happens to them.
Yeah.
But then you also have another side of the coin, which is the people who, and I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but you do have the other side of the coin where it's people who don't care about the message, but they are seeing that this is selling.
Yeah.
That this is working.
Yeah.
And people will be naive to think that
they know the thoughts and beliefs that their audience want reflected back to them. That this is a specific audience that doesn't want their worldview challenged. They want their worldview propped up and they want it accelerated. They want it reinforced. And I feel like that's, so these people make products that do that. And it's pretty clear to see. I get what you're saying when you're talking about, like, you know, these people are very well-meaning people. They have a message. They have a worldview that they really believe in. And so they do these different things to try to culturally appropriate and make relevant this idea of what a perfect world should be.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, I feel like it reminds me of the scene in Dark Knight where Alfred's like, you pushed them to the breaking point, son. and in their confusion and in their desperation, they turn to a madman. And I feel like that's what they do.
Yeah.
And the madman in the situation, obviously being the Christian music industry, is willing to capitalize on
creating
that kind of,
because now they're not questioning.
They're not questioning it.
Because why would somebody try to exploit them?
They're not being conscious consumers, which is a huge thing that you advocate for.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why I do reviews, because I do, it's not to change the minds of the directors of these movies.
Yep.
It's to get people to think about what they're buying and why they're buying it, how it actually is helping. And if you find enjoyment out of the movie for the entertainment value of the movie, then by all means go see it. But don't buy it thinking that there's some greater thing that's been promised to you that you're like, it's going to return to you tenfold or something like that.
Like, consuming this art and paying for this for this film or this movie or this music is somehow helping to advance a religious kingdom.
Right.
Like
as if you're donating.
Right. We're donating to a cause. It's almost like putting money into this imaginary thing. It's just an idea.
Into a wishing well.
Yeah. Like when you're brought up believing that like the kingdom of God is here now and it's inside you and me and it's all of us and we got to tell people about that. We got to win people.
And the word of the Lord will not return void.
Yeah. It's just evangelism. It's, yeah. And then you get people super fired up about that. And then all of a sudden you give them a very tangible way in which to contribute to a very intangible, unprovable thing. They eat it up.
And something that's very big. Like a movie is magic to most people, even a bad one. Even to me, I watch something, I'm like, geez, I don't know how this is amazing. I look at all the credits at the end of a movie, even a bad one, I'm like, I can't even get someone to come over and record a podcast. Like, I've got to travel across the country just to record a podcast with my friend Matt. So that makes it impressive to me that they got all these people to work together. Like, you've been in bands, and you know how difficult it is to get four people to actually get along and work together, even if they're getting paid.
Right.
And so you have thousands of people involved in this one project, and it actually got done, and it isn't trash. Like, it actually has something coherent about it. Is super impressive to me. Just on that, as somebody who's a content creator, I find that super impressive
from a work ethic level.
Yes,
of finishing something
right. You finished this and you really did it. Good job. Good for you. I don't know where I was going with that.
The same place you're always going. Subscribe to Say
Subscribe patreon.com/saygoodnightkevin. There is this idea in kind of the Christian movie industry. It's almost like the puzzle among all Christian movie makers, it seems, just from my perspective.
Yeah.
How do you get across this valley between...
The shadow of doubt.
Yeah, the valley of the shadow of doubt. It's like no man's land where lots of people have tried. Lots of people have ventured into the world of... making a good movie and making something that's a little deeper and not just on the nose, blatant Christian.
Right.
And it flops. Nobody goes to see it.
Yeah. No.
There's a movie in the 80s called The Mission with Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
Christians totally were uninterested.
Yeah.
The movie Luther about Martin Luther didn't do great, even though to me, that's one of my favorite like Christian movies because it's a solid, well-made film.
Monty Python, Life of Brian.
Yeah, I mean, favorite Easter
lots
movie.
Lots of Bible stuff in there.
Yeah.
And Christians hate it.
Did he say, blessed are the cheesemakers? Well, he's not talking about the cheesemakers in particular. Oh, what a great... There's a lot of great segments. There's also a good segment in there that's very relevant to today, where these anarchists are sitting around talking about like what their revolution is going to be.
And then
this guy keeps interrupting and saying, or her. So he could, or her. And then they end up deciding that they're going to fight for this one guy's right to have a baby.
Yeah.
And the other guy's like, but you can't have a baby. Yes, but he should have the right to have one. Right. But why? It's so funny. It's really...
The Judean people's front.
Yeah, it's really fun. Smart people.
That is actually one of my favorite movies. And I can say definitively the first time that I saw that movie, I was completely freaked out by it. I think I saw it in junior high. And I
too many butts.
It made me, it made me feel so weird inside because I had been told for my entire existence that this kind of thing was considered to be blasphemy. And it made me feel weird inside because it was this shame. It was this judgment of like, I believed in this God who was watching me see a film that a bunch of comic writers made to poke fun of a lot of different things, not to talk me out of my religious beliefs, but just to find the humor in the narrative.
Yeah.
And I was so scared by how irreverent it was.
And it is.
And it is super irreverent, but that's part of what makes it so funny. And so like fast forward now, that movie to me is one of the most cathartic films for me personally, because it takes all of these things that I felt like were oppressive about a belief system, and it was able to turn them into humor and somehow break them of any sort of toxic power that they held over me. And I love that about
And there is a level to where, to me, as a Christian, I have a stronger faith now, I think, to brag about how strong I'm really deep in my faith, that I'm not afraid of somebody making fun of God.
Yeah.
Because I don't think God's afraid of that.
Yeah.
I always just give this example to, you know, people on the street come up to me. They want to talk about Jesus.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, let me talk to you about Jesus. That's never happened to me. I think about the difference between my dog and me, like in terms of intelligence.
Yeah.
It's pretty wide difference. He's kind of an idiot. Mm. He thinks I'm not there when I'm not there.
Poor
like
Barkley.
He thinks that I don't exist or something. Yeah. I don't know. Or he stares at the door waiting. You saw Secret Life of Pets. Of course, we know what happens. Animals are pretty dumb, and I love my dog. I love my animals, and I have such grace and compassion for them because if he is in his cage and I've left him in there too long and he poops all over himself, like, I'm not mad at him.
Yeah.
He didn't know. He's sad. He wishes he didn't poop all over himself, but he couldn't help it. And like, you know, these types of things, I am able to have this compassion and grace.
Mm.
And the difference between my brain and his, and the difference between my brain and God's, must be huge. So the difference between Monty Python making a joke and exploring like faith through comedy versus me being perfect and keeping all the rules and commands and making sure I never.
Yeah.
It's got to look just as stupid to God.
Yeah.
Like Barkley could try really hard, like after he's pooped on himself, to be a good dog.
Yeah.
You know, like that doesn't. That's not impressive to me.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to impress me.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where my faith in God, either he isn't real.
Yeah.
Or he's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
Or he has more grace on me than I do on my dog.
Mm.
It just, it's got to be one of those things.
Yeah.
And the safest bet is to say, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And, but any of those ways, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
I can't fix it. Yeah. So that's the problem with the Christian music industry. So my question is, how do you think that there is an answer for these directors trying to find a way to make a palatable Christian movie that works on all levels?
I think that's a really good question. I think what I would love to see is Christians just deciding to embrace the art of filmmaking and to connect to the human experience and to explore the ideas of what good movies do, which is their catharsis for a lot of people. They connect with people. They're a way to help people exercise their feelings, or they're a way for them to see parts of themselves, the good and the bad, reflected in other characters. Like that, there's this whole world of storytelling that is immensely powerful, and there are people in the world that are doing it very, very well. And I feel like if Christians didn't confine themselves to having to whittle everything down to this one single religious narrative, I think it might be really freeing for them. But I think that most of the people that are making these movies are completely confined to having to stay within that message because their audience in particular are ones that want that worldview. They don't want to be challenged. They just want to be reinforced. I feel like we just keep coming back to this. And as long as you have people that are willing to spend money on that, are willing to spend money on art that is clearly not great art, or could be better with just a few simple decisions, like then they're going to continue to make that thing because it's putting money in a lot of people's pockets.
I think the caveat or the link in the chain, the weak link in the chain, is that descriptive word before the word movie. Christian movie.
Right.
How do we make a Christian movie that works?
Quit making Christian movies.
Stop making Christian movies.
Start making movies that are good.
Right.
And if what you have to say, if your ability to tell a story is powerful enough and you hone your art and your craft down, like then you'll make it good. It'll be better.
Yeah. But or not.
Or not.
But see, I think that's the fear that I think people recoil because whenever you are a cover band, you can play in a lot of bars and make a decent living.
Yeah.
You can go around all the Wild Wings and play and get tips and you know, I had a friend who's in it was in a cover band. They had a bunch of songs. They were basically like a jukebox, a live jukebox. They're never going to play the Super Bowl.
Right.
No cover band is just going to go play the Super Bowl because why would you? But to transition out of being a cover band where you have guaranteed gigs to doing original songs.
What a great comparison.
There's a leap there, and you may lose a lot of money in order to have the potential of, and it's not just money, but the comparison is success. When I say money, I mean success because it's the same thing. Mm. No, but like to grow bigger, to reach a larger audience, you would need to make that leap, the leap of faith perhaps. And I think that maybe that's what Christian filmmakers are afraid of.
It's making a skydiving movie called Leap of Faith.
Yes.
Where the guy almost dies because his parachute doesn't open, but he becomes a Christian
as
at the last
he's on
second.
His way down.
And it's, the Kendrick brothers are going to eat
God's
this up.
Hands reach down and grab him.
Hey.
Good job.
Okay,
son.
Pal. Yeah.
You won my favor. Yeah.
This is something I wish I could get in a room with all these people and be like, look, get back to when, like, just think about when you were a kid. Think about the most human moments in your life that have impacted you the most. The things that changed your perspective, that made you a kinder person. The things that connected you with people, that helped you develop empathy, that helped you tell your story, or helped you feel like you were not crazy because your story wasn't something you were making up. You could see it reflected in other people. And were any of those moments, did any of those moments happen while you were watching a shitty Christian movie that was constantly shoving down the right way to do life down your throat? It wasn't. It was these small moments where...
You should hear the stories, Matt.
I know.
They got all kinds of anecdotes.
I know, but I just think, just be honest about your...
You should hear about the miracles that happen while they're working on the movie.
Miracles?
God opened a lot of doors.
Yeah.
One of the set designers went to Home Depot and God literally automatically opened the Home Depot door. How do you explain that?
I know, but I feel like...
Checkmate, Matt.
I feel like that's just what you decide to put. That's just the packaging that you decide to put on the experiences that you have in life. You decide to see God in it. You decide to see intelligence in it. And I feel like the things that have meant the most for me in music and film was not whether or not something was Christian. Mm-hmm. It just happened to be me going through life. All of a sudden, a song comes on the radio and this artist is writing these lyrics that completely sum up what I'm going through. And it makes me not feel so alone. Or I've super messed up. The people that put up with the things in your life that are difficult, those are where your like real connections come from.
Mm-hmm.
People that have no reason to have stood by you during tough times, but then they do.
Mm.
Or people that have sat with you while you went through mistakes and have continued to offer you grace and acceptance regardless of where you were. Like the people that I'm still friends with that in my life right now are the people that are like, I don't care if you are a Christian or not.
Mm-hmm.
I just care about you because I feel like that's what Christianity is for me, is making you important, is us being connected, is us looking out for each other.
And like, excommunication.
And also, you're out.
You're out of here.
Three
Figure
strikes,
it out.
You're out.
That is very true. And I do think this is probably why I maintain my faith. One of the things, there's many things. It's not just one thing. It's not just, oh, people were nice to me, so I believe in this this cult. There are times when Christians have been terrible.
Yeah, of course.
In the hardest moments in my life, just abandoned me because of how I acted then or what led to those things. And they didn't want to, like, I mean, yes,
be associated
it's too bad,
with your sin.
Or they didn't want to affirm my sin.
Yeah.
They didn't want to think,
which is
that
so self-important.
If I'm nice to you, you might be so stupid that you're going to think I'm giving you permission to sin.
If I let this
sin.
Thing slide, God's going to hold me accountable for letting you think you could go
the
around.
The blood will be on my hands. And you'll take it as affirmation that you're good. Yeah, I'm struggling. I'm dealing with consequences of something stupid that I did.
Yes.
And your biggest fear is that I'm going to think that that was a good move on
right.
my part.
It's arrogant.
I don't think that. I'm suffering a lot of crap right now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the S word. I'm not bold enough. But I think God has, this is where I was going with the, I think God has kept individuals
yeah.
in my life when the majority are abandoning me that do stick with me and yeah. show grace. Mm. And I've never taken them as, you were fine, Kevin, whenever you did that thing that wasn't good.
Yeah.
That you were selfish and hurt somebody else. That's not okay, but I love you, and what do you need?
Because they're, yeah.
Those people are the ones who I'm like, oh, they're this grace thing is a real thing, and clearly some people get it.
Because they don't feel the need to sit in judgment on your actions. They just right. feel the need to sit with you as a person and be there for whatever you need.
And the manipulation that goes with our friendship, our employment situation.
Your acceptance is predicated
on you being good.
Right.
A good person. And of yep. course, you not stealing from me is one of the contingencies of us remaining friends.
Which but Kevin just can't get right.
But even that, like if you were stealing from me and we were friends, I would probably not just say, forget it. I'm done with you. Good luck out there. Like there's still, clearly there's something deeper there.
Yeah.
That you would think that taking something from your friend was the right move. And I, you know, maybe eventually I might say this is toxic. It's not, you do have to figure things out on your own eventually.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. But I think God has provided for me people in my life who during those bad times when the majority of Christians in my life were jerks.
And you would they equate that to God.
Or somebody. Satan, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that grace comes from God.
Yeah.
And I think that the ability to treat people graciously is a God attribute.
Mm.
And so I do, because those people... those people were Christians who treated me good, treated me well.
Yeah.
So maybe what I'm saying is that's what kept me from abandoning, from saying, well, clearly this is a hypocritical movement.
Because you gain the perspective that maybe Christianity happens like most things on a spectrum where you have
yes.
these people who go really far over here and completely gravitate towards this sort of judgmental thing. This is something I haven't quite...
Most groups fill up the bath with dirty water, yet there's still a baby in there. Baby Jesus.
Dirty bath water, baby Jesus.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
just because a bunch of people are jerks in a movement doesn't mean that I'm going to leave the movement.
Yeah.
You know, because then I'm basing my beliefs on...
You're letting them steal the joy that you're taking in the movement yourself.
It just doesn't correlate. It's not logical to think that people being bad people has anything to do with what my spiritual beliefs are.
Yeah.
Now, I get the idea that, well, there's a claim that this is life-changing material.
Yeah.
And clearly these people's lives aren't changed.
Mm.
I get the depreciation of the selling point of Christianity in mm-hmm. that. But it's the same with most things. There are people who are big jerks for every single movement that exists. And that doesn't mean there isn't merit to some of the things that they're saying.
Sure.
And so my hope is to find that merit. You know, if talking about spirituality, find what the merit is
yeah.
and get rid of all the other stuff. And sometimes that means I just get rid of all of it first and then rebuild. Like, let's start from scratch, clean slate, and then and search through what it is that,
yeah.
you know, I think. So that's Christian music.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but even in that, you know, I still go back and listen to some of the stuff that I used to listen to and enjoy it. And I don't know if that's for nostalgic purposes. I don't know if that's because there's some good music in there. I think that there are some good lyrics. I think some of the people who kind of, you know, like Reliant K, I think that they wrote decidedly different thought-provoking lyrics than a lot of Christian music at the time. Mm. And that's why when you listened to it, it blew your mind.
Yeah.
Marilyn Manson ate my girlfriend?
Wow.
But there was a confidence there that they were able to write just a funny song.
Right.
And I remember them talking about how kind of embarrassed they did that Charles in Charge cover, and they threw in "You, Me, and Jesus Can Hang Out at My Mom's Pizza Parlor."
Oh, man.
And they
I
were
just
so embarrassed later. Like, you know what? We were so insecure that we felt like we had to do that.
Yeah. I totally get that.
And now we've grown up and we're actually more secure. And we know that that was a dumb move. Not everything we do has to throw Jesus into it. And to me, I think sometimes you see Christians who are like, they'll think something that is really deep is really shallow. And they'll think something that is, to me, very shallow and surfacey, but it proudly proclaims the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. They'll call that deep. And I'll say that, but that's real. Like, you're not getting into anything. If you're already a Christian, you already know that thing. What about exploring whether, you know, like silence, you're in a persecuted environment, yep. and should you die for your faith, or should you, for the sake of getting to tell other people about your faith, lie to the government?
Yeah.
What an interesting concept to explore.
Yeah.
I love that movie because it does that, yeah. and it made me think, and I don't know the answer, you know?
Yeah, but I think there's an infinite fun in constantly exploring those kinds of concepts, in asking questions, not arriving at answers.
Right.
I feel like when I read the Bible, and when I read the Bible growing up,
mm-hmm.
it made more sense to me that I'm like, Jesus is constantly just challenging thought.
Mm-hmm.
He is very rarely ever giving people a landing pad and saying, here's a non-negotiable.
Blessed are the cheesemakers.
Yeah. And I feel like the same thing is true about our experience as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, and I wouldn't, I mean, I guess I should say this, like I would not consider myself to be a Christian.
Then you can get out of here.
Get off the SGK podcast. But I feel like it's given me the different perspective on these things that I grew up with. Like when you're talking about, you know, the very first formations of the world in Genesis and Adam and Eve, it's like one of the first things in that narrative that happens that's really interesting is that there's this tree, and the tree is the knowledge of good and evil. And what I understood that to be was making judgments, calling something Christian and something secular. And it's the first thing that's warned against in the Bible, is making these assumptions about your reality around you, that something must be acceptable to Christ and something must not be. And then to tell people that he's in all things and through all things and created all of it and it all works together for the good, and then to turn things around and be like, yeah, but there's poison everywhere and you blah, 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 and just you constantly live in this fear.
Yeah.
And I feel like I, in a really small way, we get trapped into those things where, you know, I'll come on your podcast and, or we'll just be hanging out on the back porch talking about our experiences with the Christian music industry and how the farther away we get from our experience as teenagers, the more weird and cultish and odd that it seems. But then at the same time, I don't want to make the judgment that all of that was bad, because at the same time that it was putting a lot of toxic information into my life and reinforcing a lot of really awful views that I had about myself and about my place and my worth and my value in the world.
Yeah.
It was also a rallying cry to allow me to meet a lot of teenagers who were going through the same things that I was going through.
And it's still to this day a huge reason why I make friends is because of people who did the same thing.
Yeah.
When I say, man, I remember searching through the lyrics of Creed to find Christian references, that sounds dumb to anybody who didn't go through that, but is hilarious to people who did.
Yeah, it sounds so farcical now.
Because it's so weird and silly, and why would it matter?
Right.
Why would it matter what they said? Like, they just sing about trees.
Yeah.
That's all they're singing about, really.
Yeah.
I don't know. But why would you need that to be important? And I also feel that way, like, just musicians that I listen to. Never follow your favorite musicians on Twitter. That's what I'm saying here. because they can write a deep thing in a lyric
that
rhymes, and so it can be super vague, and then you can apply that to a lot of things.
It means something.
And then
to
they
you.
Actually start saying things that they think on Twitter, and you're like, oh, they're just idiots, it turns out. Not all musicians, but most of them. No, it's just, and then you're like, oh, I connected with this, but I'm actually nothing like them. And I think songs do have that ability to persuade you through music. I mean, there are songs that a friend and I will argue about what it actually means.
Right.
And then we talk and we're like, oh, I was going through this, and so I took it as this way, and he was going through another thing, and so he took it as this way, and it got us through a moment in our life.
Which is okay.
Yeah. Because I think that's what songs are supposed to do.
Because I also feel like I experienced the inverse of that. Yeah. Where because we started out being given a platform within the Christian music industry, now when we write songs, I feel like they're coming from a place of just wanting to be genuinely creative, or to just express joy or something fun or something sad or something in some way. And now I feel like because of that stigma of being attached to that, or because of the fan base that we had in that scene, people are constantly reappropriating what we have to say.
So they're songs, interpreting your song.
Yeah, like
and
our
thinking,
songs
well,
mean
the
something
Christian?
More Christian to them
yeah.
probably than we intended.
When you
because
do this
the,
song where it's like, baby, baby, I want to make out with you.
Yeah, and they're like, God
they're
was
like,
a baby
wow,
one time.
Wow, you really want to make out with Jesus?
Yeah.
I really was inspired by that because I was going through a crisis in my faith.
Yeah.
And you brought me back by saying you wanted to make out with Jesus.
Yeah. And then I feel like they get disappointed.
That's not really one of his songs,
in real
by
life.
The way.
Yeah. Like talking about that or.
But yeah. I think that it's interesting because, you know, that obligation to even address spiritual issues in a song. Mm. Songs don't have to be that deep. Yeah. And in fact, some of the best songs that get me through times in my life aren't spiritual songs, because if I'm thinking about spiritual issues now at 32, I'm not listening to songs. I'm reading C.S. Lewis or Chesterton, or listening to like a Dawkins debate, or you know, like
doing something intellectually stimulating.
Yeah, or listening to a podcast, listening to the Liturgist podcast, so I can really open my mind to truth and feel super smart. Or I'll listen to NPR and feel super smart. You know.
Have something to talk about at the cookout tomorrow.
Yeah. No, but like at least listen to what people are saying in a complete sentence.
Yeah.
Where songs to me are really good for listening to either like angsty things, like listening to people scream about crawling through my skin.
Yeah.
Or just like emotional things like love. I think that's why love songs work, and heartbreak and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I'm not limiting what songs should be about, because obviously you can write about spiritual things and all kinds of stuff, or stress, for example. or nostalgia.
Right.
Or nostalgia-topia.
All right, you're done, Kevin.
You like nostalgic songs, though. You've done quite a few.
I love nostalgic songs.
Yeah.
Summer
of 69.
That's mine. Yeah.
Yeah, you wrote that song.
I wrote that one.
But is that a song that you like, that you feel like,
I love the song, but I don't have a connection with it in the way that somebody that grew up actually spending a summer in 1969 would have, because you can say that and it conjures for that generation an entirely different set of memories and
Vietnam. Yeah,
Viet Cong. I'm trying to make it out of there in one piece.
You know, he doesn't talk about that in the song.
It's so irreverent.
I guess he doesn't care.
Yeah. We don't care about war.
But I don't know. I think there's a lot of, you can write songs about anything, but to me, when I look to a song, it's typically more of an earthly thing that I'm thinking about, or an emotional thing. Those are the songs that really hit me.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah, and I think songs are all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're ways that
There's three topics that you can write songs about, and that should be it.
Right. So I feel like they chronicle moments of your life.
Yeah.
They allow you to compartmentalize different things and sort of bookend chapters of experiences that you had. They're instant portals to getting back to those snapshots of what you were feeling and what those sights and sounds and smells were of a specific moment. I think that they're amazing for that. And also, at the end of the day, they're kind of goofy. Like, songs are kind of goofy. They're these 3-minute long, most of the time, thought experiments, and you're condensing either emotion or a story.
It's got a rhyme. It's got to fit within the chord progression in the beats per minute.
Yeah.
It's got to have verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, and say a whole thing.
Yeah.
Or sometimes not say anything at all.
Yeah, and I feel like there's an art form to that.
Yeah,
Of being able to condense a message and get an idea across and use that. Just like
limitations can sometimes challenge you to be more creative.
And that's what movies are. It's like we've got an hour and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And people are paying attention for 20 of it. So we have to make this thing work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's an art form in and of itself, like telling somebody's whole life story in a movie, and to come out of a movie being tricked into thinking you just learned everything about Muhammad Ali.
Right.
When you're not even watching a movie about him.
Right.
There's an art form in that.
Yeah.
You know, in different ways to make time go by so slowly. Those are limitations of the medium. And sometimes I do think that Christian movies, I always reference the beginning of Up and how they were able to make you fall in love and see the whole life story of this couple in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And Christian movies can't even like make you care about people.
For an hour and a half.
Yeah. 2 hours. You're forgetting that Christian movies tend to be
longer.
Way longer. Yeah.
Well, we spent money on the film. Might as well use it.
I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's just because like people who are really, really good are just making regular movies.
I think it's because you make a judgment. You go in to see the first 8 minutes of Up and you say, clearly I am moved by that.
Yeah.
That's true. There is something moving about that story. It has hit all of these areas in me where I am empathizing. I'm sad. I feel all this longing, all this loss. That is art. That is opening up people's hearts and their minds and making the world a more free place just through the experience of this little 8-minute short that people made on computers. That's what art is. But then when you make the judgment that because we didn't show a cross, we didn't make this about Jesus, Jesus didn't come in and save the day. We don't have anything about Nazareth or Galilee.
Yeah.
Or
read your Bible and pray
Paul.
Every day.
Yeah. Or we didn't open it with a scripture verse, you know, and end it with an altar call, that somehow there's no power in it, or it's not the right kind of thing, or it's somehow, I don't know, nefarious in its intent because it didn't hit all of these beats. And I feel like that is the biggest shame. And it's why people continue to make Christian movies that last for 2 hours and don't say a damn thing.
And I think that Christian content creators are missing out on actual effective content because they're avoiding doing things like the first 8 minutes of Up that actually did have an impact.
Mm.
And I'm not saying like, how do we do the first 8 minutes of Up, but for Jesus?
Yeah, right, right.
No.
You're missing the point.
They weren't thinking about that, and that's why they were able to make something. They weren't thinking about propaganda. Yeah. They were thinking about establishing a character for the rest of the movie that you cared about. It's kind of screenwriting 101.
Yeah.
You know? setting up your world, setting up your characters in the beginning of the film.
See, that's something that I really wish that all of these Christian filmmakers, and I don't really give a shit about Christian movies one way or the other, because I don't want to watch them like you do, obviously. But when you watch, I'll watch you do something with a Christian movie, because that's what makes it interesting for me. But I do feel like there are these people that like clearly, hey, just, I know that you're making a bunch of money making these movies. I know that it's money in a lot of people's pockets, and that feels really affirming. It feels really good to have people enjoying your art and patting you on the back and saying good job. But take a screenwriting 101 course. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly like what we're talking about. Like go through
the
channels that
Audible.
Most people would have to go through now.
Yeah.
To get a degree, you know, even some of them, even just venture into the outskirts of that world of what's best practice in film. What are ways in which we tell stories? Tell us about the hero's journey. Read some Joseph Campbell. Like figure out these very ancient techniques of narrative that people have been educating themselves on and refining and honing throughout film for years.
Yeah.
Like, connect into that and just see what happens. Just see how it makes you think about things differently. Even if you have a message to get across and you decide that you're going to make a movie and it's going to be decidedly Christian, at the very least, wouldn't it be helpful to be thinking about displaying that message in a different way?
In a
way that people
potentially
haven't
before. More effective.
Potentially more effective.
Emotional medium or style or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I do that all the time. I listen to artists that I don't think I'm going to like because I know that they're going to stimulate me in some way that I wouldn't normally have sought out. They're going to make me think about reality or a world or a concept or lyrics in a way that I don't gravitate to naturally. Yeah. And that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah.
Is stretching yourself in that way.
At the worst, you can just say, well, that was terrible. That didn't help me at all.
Yeah.
And I'll go on with my day.
Yeah.
I've always felt, and this is before I even started reviewing movies, I always would joke, like, I get something out of every movie, even if it's how not to make a movie.
Yeah.
That's a hilarious joke that I just said.
Yeah.
But I remember sitting in the movie
Season
of the Witch with Nicolas Cage. Ugh. And it's a terrible movie, but I remember sitting there thinking, like, kind of deconstructing how the direction I think this could have gone that would have made it actually an interesting story,
mm-hmm.
you know? Spoiler alert for that movie, it actually turns out that the witches are real. I thought it would have been more interesting if they weren't. If it was a world where people believed witches were real and they were mistreating somebody who they thought was a witch, but you were on the edge of your seat wondering maybe they're right throughout the movie, and it turns out they're just a bunch of jerks.
Yeah.
I find that story way more interesting than you are in that world and all of a sudden, like, their fears are legitimized and she goes around and kills everybody.
Because it taps into a very human experience that is the cautionary tale that when you make judgments about people out of hysteria or out of a limited set of understandings about the world or this person, that most of the time that ends up in catastrophic.
Yeah. Mistakes that can't be taken back.
Right.
Because that's scary. Yeah. Like, that's scary that people's minds change and people are so, like, irrational in the mob pitchfork situation that they make a choice that can never be changed, that they destroy lives and then that's it. The world will never be back
There's
to
no
the way it was. There's
yeah.
no take backs. And so that's an interesting story to me. The story of Nicolas Cage is taking this girl across to try to get her to this place and then all of a sudden she turns into a witch and is killing people. That's not really that scary to me.
Yeah. Kind of sounds a little bit like Wicker Man.
Yeah, maybe. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Do you know? Good. Yeah. So don't make bad movies is the answer to that. And don't make bad Christian music. Or do what you want.
Yeah, I honestly think, I don't know if the best thing to do is to go to people that are creating art that is at the forefront of the Christian music genre right now and trying to talk them out of cashing the checks that they're writing, that they're making, you know, for, I think it just starts with having these conversations. Mm. I feel like
Agreed.
At some point, you know,
especially as somebody who's never made a movie, me coming and saying, why don't you risk your entire livelihood because I have a podcast?
I know, but foreshadowing, Kevin, I think that it's just a matter of time before you take a swing at making a movie.
You're going to make a Christian movie. I don't think it'll be a Christian movie if I made a movie.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I also believe in a
society. But it may be a Christian in a movie.
I believe in a world.
In a world.
In a world. Where people that do have these Christian beliefs and that want to have an audience and that there is an audience out there that likes hearing what they believe reflected back to them, that this is America.
It's a safe
space for that to happen. Like,
absolutely.
You absolutely have the right to do that and to enjoy all of the trappings and fame and success that come from whatever religion or religious experience that you're exploiting for money. You have the right to do that under the law. What I'm saying is, let's just slow down and get quiet just for a moment and just think about the repercussions of what this does and how are we being respectful of our audience? How are we being respectful of our faith? And if we're saying that this is like, that our faith is as important as we say it is like the way all things work together. It is the ultimate way to do life. It is the only way to live a life on this planet and have it matter. That's a really, really big claim.
Right.
And you should really think hard about the kind of ideas that you're putting out into the world and that you're propagating by being a part of this specific system.
Obviously, having a pop punk band that says Jesus in it is the answer to what you were just saying.
Absolutely.
I want Blink-182, but they say Jesus, please. That's the answer to the ultimate question of the universe.
All the God things.
On that note, Matt, thank you so much for joining me today on this beautiful podcast
thank
day.
Thank you, Kevin. I'll never do it again.
Thank you. I will never invite you to do it again. If you want to check out Matt's podcast, please do. It's 11D Life. A lot of this type of conversation and much, much more is on that podcast. You get guests, or sometimes you just, it's you, sad, sitting alone in your bedroom, talking into the microphone, trying to figure out life, doing life.
Yeah, very true.
It's great. And the most, one of the episodes recently, I was going to say the most recent, but I don't know when I'm putting this episode out. You and I are on there talking about this type of stuff some more.
Yeah.
S'mores. With s'mores.
And shocker, Kevin being on my 11D Life podcast, still to this day, one of the most downloaded.
It's a return to form.
Because you're amazing. Because you're awesome.
I don't think that's true.
But I have the freedom to believe what I want.
We have a lot of fun. I have fun. If people didn't download it, I still would have a lot of fun.
You would.
If people didn't show up to our live recording of it, I would still have a lot of fun. So go check that out and send me money. Thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you guys later. Good night.